The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, you've heard the phrase, lock her up. I want to argue why it should be expanded now to lock them up, not just Hillary, but also Obama and Biden. I'll review a State Department misgendering gaffe, which is very revealing. Debbie and I are actually going to do our roundup on Thursday. Today, we're going to discuss the DeSantis announcement and also how America helped create the influx of Venezuelans at the border. Hey, if you're watching on Rumble or listening on Apple, Google, or Spotify, please subscribe to my channel. I'd really appreciate it. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
Needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Several days ago on social media, I saw an interesting exchange between a reporter for the Associated Press, his name was Matthew Lee, and a spokesman for the State Department. And Matthew Lee was saying, hey, I've noticed that I'm getting emails from State Department employees, and all of them now have pronouns that have been attached to the sender in the cut line. So when it says it's coming from, pronouns are now appearing. And Matthew Lee says to the State Department, it looks like these are not pronouns that the people themselves are putting on, because after all, then in that case, some people would be including their pronouns, other people wouldn't. He says, it looks like you, the State Department, are assigning pronouns to people and sticking it into their emails. And the State Department guy is actually this Indian guy, kind of a goofball, was like, well, I don't really know what you're saying. I need to look into this. And I thought to myself, this is a kind of an odd exchange about pronouns. What's really going on? Well, as it turns out, what's going on is really quite amusing. The State Department evidently assigned pronouns to all its employees, and they assigned these pronouns almost randomly, which is to say that men got the pronouns of being female, not because they're undergoing transitions or any of that, not because they're taking hormones, just a guy becomes a gal, and vice versa. Women are assigned Mr. and so on. So what happens is that the entire State Department suddenly realizes that these pronouns have been evidently just handed out, almost like someone was handing them out randomly. And so, of course, what's going to happen in this kind of issue is that a lot of these guys get, quote, triggered. And by triggered, what we mean is that they freak out. But some of them evidently were also traumatized. And the State Department tried to explain and said, we were experimenting with a test program of assigning these pronouns. Why they're doing any of this, of course, is a good question. This is not something a State Department should even do. This is a waste of time. But this is an extension of how woke ideology has permeated this, all the departments. And so they evidently were experimenting with this program. They go accidentally, the program went live and assigned everybody a pronoun. They go, we're really sorry about this. Now, again, normal behavior would be to say, we were experimenting with this program, stupid program though it is, but nevertheless, we were doing it. And we didn't mean to assign these programs, so we're going to correct the matter. Thank you very much. But no, this is what the State Department says. They say now that they, first of all, anyone who, quote, feels hurt or upset by this email glitch regarding pronouns can now get counseling. Wow. So we have diplomats, evidently, who are so triggered by being assigned the wrong pronouns that they need to go into therapy. And this therapy is being provided by the State Department. So the State Department says that they have a employee consultation service, seemingly an outside agency, quote, and people can now, quote, speak to a professional counselor. I want to stress that the intent behind making this feature available is to make our systems more inclusive and provide employees with options, not to make decisions for them. And she goes on to say, I deeply regret the confusion, blah, 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 blah. So all of this is going down a bad road. Then going down the road incompetently, so stumbling and falling, then upsetting the very people that you were supposedly trying to cater to, then instead of telling them to be grown-ups and adjust to the fact that you made a mistake and you're going to fix it, you act like they are babies, adult babies working in the State Department who need to be coddled. Or you've been triggered, or you've been traumatized because there's been a wrong pronoun attached to your name. We now have counseling services. I mean, this is supposed to be the people representing America. These are the people, by the way, who staff our embassies. These are the people who are supposed to go to dangerous foreign countries and understand the underlying situation. It's very obvious the State Department itself is now in a bubble. They're in this sort of progressive woke bubble, a bubble that, by the way, the rest of the world views with consternation, if not horror. And so we are not sending our best, let's put it that way. We don't have our best people in the State Department, and we don't have our best people running the State Department. But this is what you get when left-wing and democratic fads are allowed to supplant the actual business of government. This is an agency that is supposed to be focusing on intelligence, on information, on diplomacy, on projecting America's image to the world. And instead, they are not only obsessed with all this woke nonsense, they're pushing it out onto other cultures. So it's bad enough that this is the sort of modus operandi in the State Department, but the idea that we're now going to be somehow shoving this down the throat of foreign diplomats and foreign countries. I mean, this can only invite a backlash. And by inviting a backlash, the State Department, whose job it is to make America look good in the world, is actually having the exact opposite effect. Debbie and I had a New Year's resolution to lose weight, and thankfully, PhD weight loss came to the rescue. And what a rescue. Debbie has already lost 20 pounds with just a few more to go, and I'm now on maintenance, having lost a total of 27 pounds. Wow. The program is based on science and nutrition. No injections, no pills, no long hours in the gym, no severe calorie restriction, just good, sound, scientifically proven nutrition. It's so simple. They make it easy by providing 80% of your food at no additional cost. They'll tell you when and what to eat. And guess what? You can do this without ever being hungry. The founder, Dr. Ashley Lucas, has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. She's also a registered dietitian. She helps people lose weight and, most important, maintain that weight loss for life. So if you're ready to get it done, to take the step of losing weight like Debbie and I have, call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition today. Call 864-644-1900. Now, you can also find them online at myphdweightloss.com or call the number. Here it is, 864-644-1900. It's time. I'm now at chapter 22 of What's So Great About Christianity, really toward the closing chapters of the book. And today I begin a new chapter, which is titled The Imperial I, the letter I, when the self becomes the arbiter of morality. Now, what am I talking about? Well, in the last several segments, I've been talking about materialism and the human soul. But you notice that in our culture today, we don't hear the word soul very much. What is the word we hear instead? Self. So we have an interesting question. How did we go from a term that used to be very common in Western civilization, in Christendom, the soul, to a new term that seems somewhat related to it, but is also quite different, the self? And I want to argue that the movement from the soul to the self is really the movement from one type of morality to another, a movement from, well, let's call it religious morality, to liberal morality or secular morality. So we're not talking about denying morality. Some people will say, hey, in America, we're getting away from morality. What they really mean is we're getting away from religious or traditional morality, which is not to say that the left doesn't have its own morality. Its own morality is secular morality. Think about a term like virtue signaling. When we say someone is virtue signaling, what do we mean? We mean they're trying to signal or to advertise their association with this rival morality, with progressive or liberal or secular morality. And this secular morality has now overtaken much of Europe, Canada, Australia. It's made a lot of headway in the United States, especially with young people. And there's an effort on the part of the West, and the Biden administration is part of this, to push this morality on other cultures. Think, for example, about the U.S. embassy in Afghanistan, like flying the LGBTQ flag. What are they doing? Pushing secular morality onto the traditional Afghans. So while traditional morality held sway in the past, this new morality, this secular morality, stakes its claims on the future. This is where society, this is where the world, this is where Homo sapiens species is headed. And a lot of the so-called culture wars of America, wars over abortion, over homosexual marriage and other issues, can be understood as a clash between traditional morality on the one hand and secular morality on the other. Now, what is the core concept of traditional morality? Well, the core concept is that there is a moral order in the universe that is external to us and makes claims on us. Now, in ancient times, the moral order was believed to be somehow inherent or built into nature itself. In other words, into the natural order of things. Shakespeare conveys this in Macbeth. On the Tuesday before Duncan's murders, the murder of the king, the horses turned wild in the night, quote, contending against obedience and almost seeking to, quote, make war with mankind. So the horses are basically going crazy. Why? Because what Shakespeare is intimating is that the moral order is disturbed and that is now reflecting itself in the natural order. In the night of the murder, we hear that, quote, there was a lamenting heard in the air, strange screams of death. The sky remains dark long after the day should have begun. Same in Julius Caesar. The night preceding Caesar's assassination is convulsed by reports of these sort of frightful horrors of nature. Cassius is walking out there and he sees these storms. And in fact, it makes him very happy because he's like, something is about to change. And for Cassius, who's kind of a progressive, change is good. Rome is going to be in better hands if we can somehow get it away from Caesar. So in the Shakespearean universe, the physical order itself is disrupted prior to some terrible moral crime. Now, today, we don't really make a distinction between, we don't make a link between the natural world and the moral realm in that way. So we don't see the order in the cosmos, like the motion of the planets or the rotation or the velocity of distant objects, as somehow related to an order in the soul. Now, admittedly, the link between a moral order and a natural order lives on in our time, but lives on in fairy tales. Think about fairy tales. Good and evil come embodied in witches, in spying ravens, poison apples, fairy godmothers, and princes who are named Charming. But I think with the great scientific revolution of the 17th century, 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries, it's really hard for us to see a link between orbiting planets and a rotating Earth and the moral order. We see those two things as different. But nevertheless, the idea of an enduring moral order has persisted. It remains a powerful idea in Western culture. And by the way, it is still the predominant code of morality for the rest of the world. Traditional morality is nothing more than objective morality. It's based on the idea that some things are right and other things are wrong, no matter who says differently. And in various religions, this traditional morality is typically embodied in some sort of a moral code, typically a moral code that is either pronounced or written down in some way. The best example would be the Ten Commandments, which is really the most famous list of do's and don'ts in history. And as in the case of the Ten Commandments, God is believed to be the sort of author of traditional morality. And by living up to traditional morality, we are not only being if you will, true to the world and true to human nature, we are also being obedient to the God who is the author of that morality. For the last couple of weeks, you've heard me tell you about Angel Tree Camp and ask you to help send children with a mom or dad in prison to camp this summer. So many of you have answered the call. Angel Tree Camps are operated by the nonprofit Prison Fellowship, founded by Chuck Colson. And their mission is simple. Get prisoners' kids out of bad neighborhoods or tough home situations and bless them with the fresh air and fun of a Christ-centered camp that can literally transform their lives forever. Here's a special thank you from the man in charge of the entire campaign. Listen.
I'm James Ackerman, President and CEO of Prison Fellowship. On behalf of our entire staff, and more importantly, the prisoners' children you will bless, I want to personally thank you for your donation to our Salem Radio Network camping campaign. Thanks for opening your heart and your wallet to give children a life-changing experience at a Christian camp.
James Ackerman will be stepping down at the end of the year as CEO of Prison Fellowship, and I'd like you to show him your appreciation for his years of hard work helping to change the lives of prisoners' children. Won't you help today? The cost to help bless one child with a week of Angel Tree camping is only $200, or your donation in any amount will combine with others to send the child of a prisoner to camp this summer. $400 will bless two kids, $800, four kids, and so on. Just go to my website, DineshDeSouza.com, click on the Angel Tree banner at the top of the page, or you can phone in your gift by calling 888-206-2801. The number again, 888-206-2801. Once again, the Angel Tree banner, so easy to access at the top of my website, DineshDeSouza.com. And thank you for joining my campaign to help prison fellowships Angel Tree Camp. Debbie and I normally do a Friday roundup, but we decided to do it today, Thursday, because tomorrow I'm doing a kind of a special episode. I think you're going to really like it. And the big news, of course, from yesterday, Ron DeSantis is now in the race. And I think that has a lot of implications for the Republican Party and for the country. What do you think about all this?
Well, I think, you know, as a company, D'Souza Media, we have to remain very neutral on this. We cannot take sides. I think everyone knows where we lean. Well, simply because we do not want our side to become so angry at one another and miss the bigger picture of the conservative message. And in fact, this is what we did when it was Ted Cruz up against
Trump.
You know, Ted's dad married us. Rafael Cruz married us, and so we were very close to the Cruzes. But yet, we didn't go out and campaign for Cruz.
We didn't endorse Cruz.
We didn't endorse him. You know, and of course, you know, we love Trump. So I think all that to say that I think this is good that we have all of these candidates that are going up and wanting to challenge Trump and challenge each other. But at the end of the day, I have seen this split a country in half, literally, when this happened. The conservative movement in Venezuela, the little conservative movement that was even there, just imploded. And what happened is it caused a rift among the actual conservatives. They couldn't keep it together. And what happened? Hugo Chavez came in and just decimated the entire platform, the entire political system. So I don't want that to happen in America. And I'm afraid that it will. Why? Because if people get upset, let's just say that they're wanting Trump to be president or DeSantis to be president, one of them becomes president or gets the nomination in the primary, the others won't support him. Well, guess what? The only outcome from that is going to be another 4 years of Biden or whoever, you know, Biden may be brain dead by then. I don't know. But whoever.
But their side. The other side wins.
Correct.
I mean, if the Trump people are never DeSantis and the DeSantis people are never Trump, I think this is what you're getting at. And then look how immature this is compared to the Democrats. You notice that, and I think we're talking about this morning, Bernie Sanders ran, you know, this campaign. He was, in fact, leading. It looks like the Democrats, you know, stole it from under him.
I think they pulled the rug out from under him.
And you'd think this guy would be fuming and he would be like ready to undo Biden. I will never vote for Biden. This was taken from me. No. Bernie Sanders is completely in the Biden camp.
As are his supporters.
As are his supporters.
You know, they took a cue from him, right? And they embraced whoever. And again, the Democrats are so much more far left now than they ever have been. I mean, even Biden, who was not known to be far left, is far left.
He's far left because the people steering the canoe are all steering to the left.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to say here is this, and this is, our films are only a metaphor for this, is when you make Hillary's America, we're not making it to support this Republican over that Republican. We're making it to unify our side, Republicans, conservatives, patriots, Christians, against the radicalism of the real enemy.
Yeah. Don't forget.
Right. And so this is, I think, also where a little bit of Reaganism comes into play. Reaganism's view is that on the Republican side, we're not enemies. We're not enemies of each other. We have preferences. We prefer this guy over that guy. We also recognize that we're on the same team.
Right. We shouldn't let that get in the way of the bigger picture, which is defeating Democrats. That should be the ultimate goal, not each other.
And also my thought about with Trump and DeSantis is that regardless of who I personally support this time around, I want to preserve our strong candidates for the future. Let's say this is not DeSantis' turn. Let's just say that it's Trump's turn. Okay, but do we want to bruise DeSantis so badly in the process that he becomes unviable for 2028? And then what? We're going to choose between what? Mike Pence and Nikki Haley, who haven't been bruised in the same way? We have a lot of talent on our side, and we don't want to shut those people down prematurely. Some people might say, and some Trumpsters might say, right. Well, why is he running that? You know, and I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure I would have recommended that he do it, but he is doing it. So there it is. He's in the race. Yeah. That's life.
And they themselves can kind of be a beacon to their supporters and you know, make sure that their supporters understand that at the end of the day, they need to support the candidate that wins the primary. And I'm just not sure that these candidates do that. So
part of the way to think about it is that our loyalty is to the party, and it's also to the country.
More importantly, to the country.
More to the country. Yeah. But of course, I mean, why do we support the Republican Party if not? We think the Republican Party of the two is far better for the country. And I'm sure that that's how the candidates see themselves. They see, well, obviously a vote for me is the best thing to happen to the Republican Party and to the country. But for us to keep the larger objective in mind, which is to defeat the Democrats, that's a wise thing as we go through what I think are going to be fairly, fairly raucous Republican primary campaigns. If aches and pains are the problem, Relief Factor is the solution. Debbie and I started taking Relief Factor a couple of years ago. The difference we've seen in our joints, nothing short of amazing. Aches and pains are totally gone thanks to this 100% drug-free solution called Relief Factor. How does it work? Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor love it. They order more. They become regular customers because it works for them. Debbie's a true believer. She can now do exercises that for a long time she wasn't able to do. So it's been a real game changer for her, her aunt, other members of our family, Mike here in the studio, and for many other people. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. The number again, 800-4-RELIEF, or go to relieffactor.com. You'll feel the difference. It might be puzzling to a lot of people to see so many Venezuelans at the southern border. We obviously don't have a border with Venezuela. We have a border with Mexico. We expect illegals to be coming from Mexico into the United States. So we're dealing with this really strange phenomenon now, which is that our southern border has become an international kind of crossing point. And if you look at some of these videos, you see people from all over Latin America, somehow they've made their way through Mexico to the border, and a substantial contingent of these people are Venezuelans. Now, We've talked in our movies and also Debbie on the podcast and elsewhere about Venezuela, and there may not seem a kind of connection between the internal developments in Venezuela, the socialism of Venezuela, and what's happening at the border. But one of the points that Debbie's been making recently, and I think you want to make it even more clearly today, is there is a profound connection.
There is absolutely a profound connection. People didn't really understand why we were trying to save Venezuela. I mean, it literally, when...
Well, they might think it's because you're from Venezuela.
Yeah, exactly. So. Why does she talk about Venezuela so much? Well, besides the parallels of the Venezuelan left and the American left, which I've made for many, many years, over a decade, there is also the fact that because we've ignored Venezuela for so long, and let me tell you who hasn't, Iran hasn't, China hasn't, Russia hasn't, they are in Venezuela. So besides the international like danger of having those entities in that country, wanting the uranium, wanting the gold, we also did not help Venezuela, didn't help the country. We didn't help take out Maduro when we could have, when we very well could have. All of those factors have led to a, let's just say the middle class in Venezuela is now dirt poor, and the dirt poor in Venezuela are the ones we are having cross the border now. The people that had absolutely zero to eat, zero to, you know, have a shelter over their heads. They felt like, you know what? Socialism is not working out in Venezuela. They promised us all kinds of goodies, and look what they've done. They've made us even worse off than we were before, and we were already worse off. So those people have crossed the Darien jungle and have crossed all of Central America to get to where they are today, i.e. the American-U.S. border, the Mexican-U.S. border. So the reason that I'm so upset about it is because we, America, the government, ignored it. And now, guess what? It's right here.
A couple of things to say about all this. One is that I think Trump did have an opportunity to act here. And Debbie's not talking about Trump sending a big contingent of U.S. troops, an invasion of Venezuela, none of that. Because in a country like Venezuela, I mean, two U.S. Navy SEAL teams would have been enough to handle this autocratic government that subverts elections and denies all basic rights, not to mention the strategic importance of the country. Now, why didn't Trump do it?
Bad intel and bad advisors.
Bad advisors in the State Department. Because Debbie and a group of Venezuelans actually tried to get through in various ways to the Trump administration. I think Trump's view was this, that I, Trump, have been running to like get us out of needless wars. I'm trying to get us out of Iraq. I'm going to get us out of Afghanistan. So it's going to look optically, it's going to look inconsistent. But see, the point is, it's not inconsistent. It's not inconsistent to say that this is an irresponsible use of power, and this is not. I can do this effectively over here, but I can't do something effectively over there. So in other words, it's all about making the right choices about when and how to intervene. And sometimes the intervention is a soft intervention. It's only diplomatic. Sometimes it's sanctions or trade pressure. Sometimes it's that you basically have to send in the Marines, so to speak. That's what we did, for example, to get Soleimani. So there are all kinds of ways. Right. It's not just a matter, either you're an isolationist or you're a full-scale intervention.
Yeah.
The false impression of the Iraq war was that those were our two choices. Obviously, if those are our two choices, I'd choose non-intervention. But the point is that, and Trump, in principle, has never been a pure non-interventionist. But for whatever prudential reason, he decided, I don't think this is going to be a fight I can take. Maybe he thought it's something he could do in the second term. I think what you're saying is those become costly.
It has cost us dearly. We have seen an implosion of illegal immigration and most
explosion
of illegal immigration from mostly Venezuela. Think about that.
Yeah.
We could have prevented that.
Well, and also the, you know, some people think this is, if you didn't know much about Venezuela, you'd go, hey, listen, you know what? These Venezuelans, they see that socialism doesn't work over there. So guess what? If they come to America, maybe they'll be patriotic. Maybe they'll be on our team.
No.
Maybe they'll recognize this is a system that works better over here. But what Debbie's saying is, no, these are the bottom of the barrel people that emotionally supported Chavez, thinking, hey, listen, free microwave. Hey, free food, free roof over my head.
They still want free stuff. Now they want here.
So they realize maybe this is a socialism that works.
Yeah.
Maybe the America's rich enough that they can afford to do these handouts. And so the handout people are coming, is your point.
Exactly.
And not to mention, we're not even counting the drug dealers and criminals and child traffickers. We're just saying a lot of ordinary people. And again, we understand why they come. And quite frankly, if you're dirt poor, you don't know how you're going to make a living and someone is giving you free food, I don't even blame you for wanting to take it, because you're like, hey, listen, I'd like to have some, you know, burritos for my family. And so these
burritos.
Are people, well, I mean, actually, you're right. Nobody eats burritos.
They don't eat burritos in Venezuela, honey. No.
Yeah. That's right. I stand corrected on the burrito front, but the general point is valid. And we're not getting their best. Let's just put it that way. Debbie and I are eating better this year. We've lost weight, but foods we can't seem to eat enough of, and it's a requirement, are veggies and fiber. Now, what better way to get all your fruits and veggies plus fiber than with Balance of Nature? Balance of Nature fiber and spice right here. It's a proprietary blend of 12 spices for digestive health. The intense flavors and deep colors of spices are the most condensed whole food source of phytonutrition available. It's recommended to be paired with this, their star product, fruits and veggies in a capsule. So easy. Select the whole health system for the best price. Start your journey to better health right now. Take advantage of Balance of Nature's great offer, $25 off plus free fiber and spice with your first preferred order of fruits and veggies when you use discount code America. The offer can end at any time, so act now. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751, or go to balanceofnature.com. Use discount code America. Debbie has been in touch with some Venezuelans and a new development inside of Venezuela. Now, it's important to realize that socialist countries, once they go socialist, it's really hard to bring about a change. In fact, think of examples of socialist countries that have in some way repudiated socialism. I'm not saying it's never happened. Of course, the Soviet Union is an example of a socialist regime that collapsed. But again, it collapsed against their will. They couldn't keep it going. And so they were forced to do something else. But you think of Cuba, the Cuban Revolution going back to the 1950s, it's still there. China has made some modifications and introduced capitalist elements into a now state-run capitalist totalitarian system. But hey, China is still the way it was. Its basic political framework is exactly the same. But you think that it may be, and of course the Venezuelan collapse came in the 1990s, so it is a couple of decades old. But you think that there might be a glimmer of hope. Why?
I do. My buddy, Maria Corina Machado, she is
She's
a fighter. So Maria Corina was she was an assemblywoman or congresswoman in the early 2000s when Hugo Chavez was president, his first term as president. And, you know, he was very, very vocal about not being a socialist and bringing industry to the country. And he also claimed that if he wasn't doing a good job for the Venezuelans, that they could recall his election at any time. So Maria Corina challenged him because, of course, he did not keep his promise and he lied about who he actually was. So Maria Corina started a petition to oust him, essentially. And they had a recall election in 2004. And this is where all of the shenanigans with some of the machines that some people talk about to this day. Apparently, there was a lot of cheating going on, and he won that election. In other words, he was not recalled.
And the recall side was leading 70-30 in all the polls going up to the actual vote. And then somewhat flipped. Mysteriously, it was completely flipped and Hugo Chavez wins 70-30. So this is the basis of people, lots of people in Venezuela thinking, hey, listen, this was not an actual genuine election.
I'm just going to correct you. It was 60-40.
60-40. Yeah, okay.
But it was close enough. But anyway, so yes, that is what happened. And everybody was super upset. Maria Corina knew something had happened. And she became enemy number one. Hugo Chavez could not stand her. He wanted to oust her from being a congresswoman. And really destroyed her life. Her life was utterly destroyed after that.
People who follow Venezuela probably never heard her name. They've heard of a couple of other opposition figures. One of them is Juan.
Well, Capriles first.
Guaido.
And Guaido, recent.
More recently. And another guy named Leopoldo Lopez mm-hmm. and so on. So there are a number now, Debbie mentioned many parties, there are a number of sort of opposition figures to the regime. But here's the point, that these opposition figures generally are all softies. And by that, I mean, some of them are welfare state liberals. Some of them are, the Venezuelans call them socialist light, mm-hmm. which is to say that they don't want an authoritarian socialism, but they do want what they consider to be a more benign socialism. And so Maria Corina is not any of this.
No, she's a right-winger.
She's a right-winger.
She's what we would call a Magaswellan.
A Magaswellan, yes. So her view is that, and interestingly, what's happening in Venezuela is that the public that is opposing the regime, more and more people in Venezuela, don't trust the opposition because they think that the opposition is sort of in bed with the regime. The regime has a way of handing out some goodies to opposition members to keep them in line. Hey, listen, it's not all that different from here, where some people suspect that the rhinos are sort of in with the establishment. They get benefits from the establishment. They get titles. They get cultural accolades in the media and elsewhere. And so their interests are not really with the right or with the Republican Party. Their interest is in maintaining this kind of special status.
Look, I don't know if Maria Corina can win. She wants to run against Maduro in 2024, but I'm going to help her. I'm going to really help her as much as I can. We're going to help her because we need Venezuela to be free again so that we don't have fear of having some mortal enemies shoot us some missiles from Venezuela.
I think when it comes to towels, you got to admit nothing compares to the MyPillow towels. Mike Lindell has really hit a home run with this one. The MyPillow towels are towels that actually work. They're soft to the touch without the lotiony feel. They have proprietary technology, which makes them highly absorbent. Now, other towels feel good, but they don't really absorb. MyPillow towels are available in multiple styles and sizes, made with 100% USA cotton, machine washable and durable, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. And Mike Lindell is now running a flash sale on the My Towel 6-piece set for $25. What? With promo code Dinesh. The towels are regularly $99.98, so it's an amazing offer. Take advantage of it. It includes 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths. Go ahead and call 800-876-0227. The number again, 800-876-0227, or go to MyPillow.com to get the discount. You need to use the promo code D-I-N-E-S-H Dinesh. Debbie was giving me the details this morning on this quite amusing article involving the game show called Wheel of Fortune. And she's like, we got to do this in the podcast. And I'm like, really? We're going to be talking about Wheel of Fortune on the podcast? Well, as it turns out, the article was not about Wheel of Fortune per se, but about a certain kind of mentality that is revealed by what happened on this Wheel of Fortune episode. So give us the details so we can then...
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, look, I have been a Wheel of Fortune fan, but I'm really bad at solving puzzles. I mean, I'm going to say it right now, full disclosure.
You mean these
I can never solve
complete these vocabulary things or...
No, I'm so bad. I can't even do crosswords. I'm that bad. I just cannot, I don't know what it is about my brain. It just doesn't, maybe it's the language thing. I don't know.
But you like watching it.
I love watching it. It's fun. It's fun.
And of course, we like Pat Sajak, because the guy who's been running Wheel of Fortune, the host for a long, long time, conservative.
3 years, I think.
This is a guy who's very solid on the political front. And one of the rare outspoken conservatives in Hollywood. Well, what happened on the show?
Yeah, so apparently there was a guest who got to the puzzle, to the bonus round, the very end, right? And he didn't get the puzzle. And a lot of people slammed Wheel of Fortune because they said that Wheel of Fortune was just too difficult to solve. And it wasn't even a phrase. And so apparently...
So the guy stood to win a bunch of money, right?
He stood to win $100,000.
Right.
And apparently it was a bust. He didn't get the word.
He didn't end up empty-handed, right? You told me that he ended up
winning like $27,000 from the earlier rounds. But anyway, for the category, it was phrase. And his name was Cesar. And he chose four additional letters, HGMA, and was left with the puzzle that and then as a tall ATR, right? And so...
With a bunch of empty letters,
so,
and your job is to fill them in.
And so he was like, that was a capital. Says our guest while struggling to solve the puzzle. But after 10 seconds, of course, the buzzer goes off. And Pat Sajak replied, well, you needed one more letter, either the P or the F, he suggested, right? So then Wheel of Fortune co-host Vanna White revealed the letters of the puzzle, and it read, that was a pivotal factor.
Hold on for a second. So the phrase evidently was this, that was a pivotal factor. And by the way, you can see in news shows and news analysis when they're talking about something, what is the cause of this? Well, that was a pivotal factor in making that happen.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying this is an extremely common phrase, but the point is, isn't it true that as you get to the higher rounds...
Yeah, it's supposed to get harder. It is. It's supposed to be
right?
almost impossible.
They're not going to use a stitch in time's
A
is nine.
They'll have $100,000, or they'll have $1 million, or they'll have a Mercedes or something like that. A little bit harder. But it is supposed to be hard.
Well, the funny thing is how the audience responded, because they were apparently super mad that this guy didn't get it. Presumably, they didn't get it either.
Yeah.
And so they've been blasting Wheel of Fortune.
They quickly took to Twitter to express their outrage over the challenging bonus round. They're like, that was a phrase. You know, he got robbed, and then they kept going on and on. And so anyway, on social media. So basically, this isn't the first time that this has happened. There has been a lot of outrage over ridiculous bonus round words, phrases. Last month, a contestant failed to solve another puzzle with the category, what are you doing? And it was joining the fray.
Now, I got to say, joining the fray is, in fact, a very common phrase. This person is joining the fray or becoming part of a larger group or a larger force that's
out
there.
Right, but the category was, what are you doing? It wasn't phrase, it was, what are you doing? And then they're like, joining the fray? That's not something you do.
Of course it is.
You join the fray. What do you do? You know, anyway. So what I think the reason that I brought this to your attention is because this is kind of...
Well, let's just read the mentality. This person goes, you know, I have never heard of joining the fray before in, quote, my entire life, all caps. Can we get some kind of sponsor to give this woman a prize? What the hell kind of puzzle was that? Come on now, ridiculous. I mean, it's the indignation here that's sort of comical, because they're acting like, listen, I mean, what is this, a participation trophy?
Right, and that's what I was trying to tell you, is that this game show, for whatever reason, has become kind of symbolic of how dumb America is getting. And the fact that, you know, hey, if you can't solve a puzzle, maybe perhaps don't watch Wheel of Fortune.
or don't try out for... I mean, to me, the reason I like to watch these spelling bees is I say to myself, I'm a pretty good speller. But it's amazing to see 11 and 12-year-olds, and they're given really hard words. And I think, oh, man, I'm not even sure I know that one. And then you have the key, and he gets it right. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. So the harder the question, the more interesting it becomes to watch, because this is what gives you that sense of wonder, of amazement, that kids have obviously mastered the spellings of these really difficult words, words that are never used in ordinary life. And never hear someone go, I've never heard that word before. Why is it in the spelling bee? I mean, the point is, we want hard words. We want this to be a challenge. That's the appeal of watching these shows.
Exactly.
But evidently, in the sort of ethos of our current culture, the idea is, don't make it hard, make it really easy. It's got to be sort of a phrase that every person is familiar with.
Yes,
this is not a good development.
Not good at all.
Bank failures, record inflation, spy balloons, mass layoffs. It's a recipe for disaster if your investments are with a typical financial advisor. But my friend Rebecca Walser, you've seen her on the podcast and you've seen her broad grasp, not just of domestic issues, but also of things happening on the international front. She's different. She's a wealth strategist, a tax attorney. She has a global MBA from the London School of Economics. She told her clients to get out of equities back at the end of 2021. So Rebecca Walser got it right when most other advisors got it wrong. And who had to pay the price? Well, you as the consumer. So don't let blind loyalty leave you losing money. Call Rebecca Walser's office today to protect your wealth from the market uncertainty. Debbie and I just did a call with Rebecca's team to talk about our investments, and you should too. Go to friendofdinesh.com to book a call with her team today. That's friendofdinesh.com to protect your investments and your future. I'm sure you remember the raucous cries of lock her up that would often attend Hillary Clinton during her campaign stops and rallies. And even at one point in the debate, Trump, this was going back to the 2016 election, said to Hillary something like, you should be in jail. So the idea here is that the Clintons are really criminals. And it may seem shocking to suggest, but of course it's true. The Clinton Foundation was a receptacle of donations from all these foreign entities. Basically, Hillary was selling American foreign policy in exchange for money. This is how the net worth of the Clintons went from close to zero to tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. And we've seen a repeat with the Bidens. The Bidens have a racket that resembles the Hillary racket. Some small differences. Bidens don't have a foundation. They operate through the Biden family. Family members become bagmen for Biden. And one of the most telling revelations in the Durham final report is that there were four separate investigations going on into Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation that were shut down prior to the 2016 election. Now, the interesting question is, shut down by who? And the answer there is not Hillary Clinton. Why? Because Hillary Clinton, of course, in the Obama administration was the Secretary of State. She would not be in a position to shut down DOJ investigations, because after all, she was in the domain of foreign policy. So the guy who is ultimately responsible for shutting down the Clinton investigations is none other than one Barack Obama, which is to say that Obama was a cover-up artist for the scams of Hillary. It could be that he was an enabler of those scams. I'm not saying that Obama benefited from them directly himself. Obama probably figured, well, listen, I've been such a cool cat being the first black president and all. I'm sure I'll be able to lucratively cash in after my presidency. So I don't need to run this kind of international racket because I'm going to get a big Netflix deal. I'm going to be flying on people's private jets. I'm going to buy an expensive house in Martha's Vineyard and I'll have the cash to do it. And all of that has actually come true. And let's look at these four investigations that I've referred to. They're federal probes, and they were occurring from different field offices. Remember, the Clintons were from Arkansas. So one of the investigations was coming from the field office in Little Rock, Arkansas. There was another one in Washington, D.C. There was another one in New York. So multiple investigations are all going on through the FBI offices in those areas. And then they're all shut down. They're all shut down by the order of the top brass of the FBI, but the top brass of the FBI is itself answerable to the DOJ, the Department of Justice, and the DOJ is, of course, answerable to Obama. So the Little Rock and New York offices were investigating a claim that an outside commercial industry had created this, what they call a flow of benefits scheme. They were making large donations to a nonprofit in exchange for favorable government treatment. Basically, bribery. You make the donations to a nonprofit to seem like you're being charitable. You're not being charitable. You want to get something out of it. The DC investigation was based upon the Clinton Foundation. The idea that the Clintons accepted millions from foreign governments as well as massive Russian corporations, all trying to influence U.S. foreign policy dating back to Hillary's days as Secretary of State. This is, by the way, something that Peter Schweitzer had outlined in his book called Clinton Cash. And then there was another investigation by a well-placed source that Hillary continued to accept political donations throughout her presidential campaign. So this is fast forward. Hillary is now no longer in the administration. She's now running for president. But see, you can get anticipatory bribes when you're running for president. Hey, listen, give me money now. And when I'm elected later, I will be able to do you a favor. So all these investigations were going on and they were all shut down. What does this mean? What this means is that the Democrats of today at the highest level are crooks and criminals. Now, I'm not going to say that this is always true of the Democratic Party. As I've shown in my earlier work, there was a history of corruption and chicanery going back to the very origins of the Democratic Party, but it's not an uninterrupted history of graft and corruption. You've had Democrats who were honest guys along the way. They might have been in a dishonest party, but they were honest themselves. Think about a guy, for example, like Truman or JFK or Jimmy Carter. To my knowledge, those guys were not crooks. They might have been fools and they might have made really bad decisions on about Iran, about the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, about other matters. Not so much Truman, but JFK also made his share of mistakes. But the kind of corruption that we've seen on the part of the two Clintons, on the part of Obama, and now on the part of Biden, really, to my knowledge, unprecedented. And so I think the lock 'em up needs to be revived. I think the Republican Congress wants to reopen these Clinton investigations. And the DOJ is pushing back. And just as they cover up for Biden, they're covering up for Hillary. They're like, well, we can't open up those investigations now. A lot of that data no longer exists. Well, guess what? If it no longer exists, let's go back and get it. Why? Because this is not a case where there's a statute of limitations of any kind. In any case, we need to know the facts. So my point is that we need to revive the lock 'em up concept, except in this case, we're talking about locking up the three primary malefactors of the Democratic Party, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and the two Clintons.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.